You're listening to TIP.
Hey everyone, welcome to this week's episode of the Bitcoin Fundamentals Podcast. On today's show, I have back Lightning Lab's very own Ryan Gentry to talk to us about some of the new and exciting software technology that's going to change the way people interact with the Bitcoin Lightning Network. With the Taproot Asset Protocol that interacts with Lightning, outside entities can now tokenize dollars or any other stablecoin and send them over the Lightning Network via the channels that connect all the nodes. During this discussion, Ryan does an exemplary job making this highly technical achievement accessible to the listener, along with the risks and opportunities that it affords. There's a lot happening, and this conversation is one you definitely will not want to miss. So here's my chat with the thoughtful Ryan Gentry.
You're listening to Bitcoin Fundamentals by the Investors Podcast Network. Now for your host, Preston Pysh.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm here with Ryan. Ryan, it's been too long. It's been a bear market. You've been building, and welcome back to the show.
Super excited to be here. Really, thanks for having me on. Yes, you know, while I would caveat and say, you know, the very smart engineers on my team have been building. I help, but you know, they've been building. And yeah, we're really excited to chat about our the new developments, you know, Taproot Assets, our big mainnet launch, and in general, just an update on Lightning and Bitcoin.
We're talking about the Taproot Asset Protocol. You guys have been working on this for how long? Because it's been a few years that I initially heard about the launch, but now it's official. It's out. How long have you guys been working on this?
Yeah. So the first public announcement where we dropped the specification, the Bitcoin improvement proposals that describe, you know, again, this is really important to note, this is an open source protocol. That was at Bitcoin 2022. So, you know, sometime late April or early May of last year. We did our first kind of alpha drop of the code, you know, which was very much pre-product, I believe, in September of last year. And so that was kind of version 0.1. We had version 0.2 sometime in between, you know, maybe 6 months or so ago. And then this past Wednesday is when we did the version 0.3 launch, which is the first one that is, you know, mainnet ready. So this is gives developers the tools to issue, send, receive, and explore assets on the Bitcoin blockchain. Super excited to have it out. Super excited to get it in developer hands. Like I can just tell you, internal metrics already of what we've seen, the uptake we've seen over the last 24 hours have been like really impressive traction on social media. People are really excited about this. So, you know, the team has been hard at work. We're getting to see, you know, a little bit of early payoff, which is awesome and super validating. But the ultimate goal of Lightning integration of, you know, stablecoins and financial assets that are integrated with the Lightning Network, you know, that's still yet to come. So this is like a really important milestone. We got the on-chain portion shipped ready for mainnet. And now we're, you know, back to heads down, getting the Lightning integration built out.
Help people understand where this is at in Bitcoin. So is this layer one, layer two on Lightning? Where's the code kind of manifesting itself?
Yeah, it's interesting because it doesn't really fit into the usual, you know, layered paradigm. What I will say is that from a high level perspective, what we're doing here is, you know, Bitcoin individual, the smallest unit of a Bitcoin in the database is a UTXO, right? An unspent transaction output. So I like to think of these as like the equivalent of a gold bar. You know, UTXOs can be of different sizes, different denominations. You can have a UTXO that's 100 Bitcoin, 1,000 Bitcoin. You can have one that's as small as, you know, a couple hundred Satoshis, but they are all objects as these UTXOs, which I, you know, you can think of as a gold bar. So what we do with Taproot Assets is when you mint some new assets on the Bitcoin blockchain, what you do is you take one of those UTXOs and you fill it up with a bunch of new assets. So you have a Bitcoin, a UTXO that was, say, worth one Bitcoin. You make a transaction and all of a sudden you have a UTXO that's one Bitcoin and also has $100 of a stablecoin in it. Right. So like from a code perspective, what we're doing is we are committing to a bunch of off-chain metadata that says, you know, this is issued by Preston. It is, there are 100 units and it has, you know, this ticker, et cetera. Right. And we are committing that information to a UTXO. So on-chain, this is as scalable as of a protocol as you can possibly get, right? It's very much like Lightning. where all the actual activity happens off-chain, and there's just a really, really small footprint of data on-chain. So, you know, effectively what this could do is, you know, you could mint a million units of a stablecoin and pay a couple cents. You could transact millions of units at a time and only pay, you know, a single on-chain fee. So it's an off-chain protocol that, you know, we think is as incentive compatible with Bitcoin as you can get, very similar to Lightning, but it is not, I wouldn't say, a layer two, because we are actually transacting assets that aren't Bitcoin, right? They are net new assets that are, you know, predominantly in the early days, we expect, tied to off-chain assets like, you know, how stablecoins are referencing, you know, reserves held by some corporate entity. These are similar in that they're off-chain assets that have been realized on-chain for the global liquidity, instant settlement of Lightning, et cetera.
So let's just take the example of a dollar stablecoin. So you're coming up with this Taproot asset protocol. You're saying that there's 100 tokens of US dollars, and they are not on Bitcoin. But what you do is you inscribe, almost like you're throwing an anchor into layer one Bitcoin, and you're inscribing that this ledger of these 100 US dollar tokens exist in this new Taproot asset protocol. And you're throwing that anchor into layer one Bitcoin to say that this is the proof, this is the inscription proof that this was created at this date and time or in this block.
I would say that, like, the word inscribe now, because of the ordinal stuff, like, that has a little bit of different connotation, where ordinals, okay, with inscriptions, they're actually writing into the block space itself.
Yeah.
Right. We are doing something much lighter weight. It's basically just a timestamp. Right, is a, you know, timestamp that's verifiable and provable that says these were issued at this time by this key and with this information. And everybody who follows the protocol, who's running the software, can notice that, recognize it, and agree upon it.
Got it. So it's a lightweight anchor that, through encryption, that's what makes it lightweight. Because when we talk about inscriptions, I think it's important that, like, you could take all the data from a JPEG and inscribe that into layer one Bitcoin through inscriptions and point some type of reader or browser to that data on the blockchain. And you can repopulate that image with a web browser by looking at this. Is more of, we would take that JPEG, we would compress it through encryption down to just a hash effectively. And then we're populating that hash. And if you have the key to know what compressed it, then you can open up the file and know what it says inside. Am I describing that correctly, Ryan?
Yeah.
I'm trying to understand.
Yeah, no, I know. It's a lot to wrap your mind around, but effectively, like, and it's important to note for the audience that, you know, all of this is going to be abstracted away from the users, right? What you're going to see is you're going to have a wallet that says, oh, do you want to generate an address to receive some USD whatever on Bitcoin? And you'll generate an address. It'll look a little bit different from a Lightning address and a little bit different from a Lightning invoice if you're receiving on chain. But then the person who's sending to you will get the address. They'll press send just like a normal Bitcoin transaction, and it'll just work and it'll behave kind of exactly the same. But your wallet, what it's doing is a bunch of this complicated cryptography in the background to verify, like, okay, this asset that's being sent to me is one issued by the issuer that I'm expecting, right? It's not a counterfeit. I can prove cryptographically that it is issued by the person I'm expecting. Two, I can prove that I'm only receiving, you know, the amount of units that I want, or I can verify that I'm only receiving the amount of units that I want. And, you know, three, I'm verifying each step in this asset's history back to the actual issuance, right? Making sure that every step along the way, it was not double spent, just like we do with Bitcoin. But that's one of the really cool things about the protocol is we inherit, although, you know, a lot of this nature of the assets themselves are off-chain for scalability reasons, we inherit all the same double spending protection of Bitcoin. We inherit a lot of the integrity and the security of the protocol by, you know, like you're saying, anchoring into the Bitcoin chain and committing this data into the chain itself.
So for years, having been in this space, and for years I've heard from Ethereum folks, Tron, the people at Stacks, every one of them are saying, or at least they have to date, said that something like this is impossible to do on Bitcoin, and you have to have a proof of stake system and not a proof of work system to do this. And it appears that, like, that is not true, and that you guys have kind of cracked the software to enable mm-hmm. this. Is that a fair statement, or do you think that there's still some nuance to what I just said?
I would actually say that the nuance is not necessarily that we cracked anything, because this is, you know, there's a long lineage of people trying to build these protocols on the Bitcoin network. You know, and we reference and credit a lot of prior art in the Bitcoin improvement proposals, right? Like, I know Peter Todd has done a bunch of work here. In particular, there's a lot of old ideas of trying to build asset layers on top of the Bitcoin blockchain. I think Taproot in particular, and then just the timing of the demand of stablecoins, made it to where we could build a really nice, slim, scalable protocol that natively integrated with the Lightning Network to serve a use case that we just know that there's tons of demand for, right? So like, on the kind of other chains perspective, you know, that's a little bit of their talking their own book, which is fine. That's part of the game. But, you know, stablecoins started on Bitcoin. They began on the Omni protocol, you know, years ago, a decade ago. And it was just that they weren't, the protocol was on-chain only and didn't scale, and, you know, wasn't able to leverage the Lightning Network at all. And then, you know, just general developer friendliness was not really a huge priority in those super early days. So we've kind of, you know, more kind of taken a more updated view with updated technology of old ideas and made them new again. And so, you know, I think that we're really excited, having seen, I think the greatest hope for this protocol is that we've seen a lot of developers and a lot of users expand beyond Bitcoin to other chains to try and, you know, experiment with these new use cases. And we're kind of bringing these use cases that we have admittedly seen succeed elsewhere back to Bitcoin, right? Back to the mothership, back to the secure, decentralized infrastructure. And, you know, we hope that in this next bull cycle, we will bring a lot of those users and developers back, and we'll retain a lot of the new users that show up, because we have kind of improved the value prop, so to speak, of the Bitcoin ecosystem.
You had mentioned haven't levered the Lightning Network. Is mm-hmm. the Taproot Asset Protocol leveraging the Lightning Network as well as Layer 1?
So that is the ultimate goal. Like, there's like a lot of prerequisites that had to be built first before that. And so the two major ones are, one, we needed to upgrade the Lightning Network generally to support Taproot channels. And so, for context, for those that aren't familiar, you know, the Taproot soft fork, I believe, was activated in 2020, I think. And, you know, that gave us, 2020 or 2021. And so that gives us, you know, a whole bunch of new capabilities for, you know, more private channels, you know, more cost-effective channels, et cetera, on the Lightning Network. So we had to build all the Taproot channels first. And then we also had to build all of the on-chain components of the Taproot Assets protocol first, so that you could mint, send, and receive on-chain. But now, with these two prerequisites finished, live Taproot channels are, you know, live in LND, the Lightning Network daemon. Lightning Labs is open source software implementation of the Lightning Network as an LND 17, which we shipped a month ago. And now we have the Taproot Asset daemon live on mainnet for on-chain usage. The next step is combining these two together so that you can transfer Taproot assets over Lightning Network, which is where we think, you know, particularly for stable coins, but, you know, for other uses, that's like the real value prop. That's the real killer use case that we're excited to enable. And it was important that, as you noted, none of the kind of previous asset issuance, asset management protocol attempts on Bitcoin were specifically designed to interoperate with the Lightning Network. Right. And so that's one of those things where, you know, again, the demand here was in 2021, after the El Salvador Bitcoin legal tender announcement, the Lightning community saw just tons and tons of explosion of usage in emerging markets in particular. Right. I think that a lot of the El Salvador use case, and, you know, give credit to Jack Mahler for kind of spreading the word, people really got the cross-border remittance use case of Lightning. That was one that really clicked for people. Right. And so we started seeing Ebex Mercado in Central America, the Bitcoin Beach wallet in Galoy in El Salvador, of course, you know, Neutron Pay in Southeast Asia, Bitnob in West Africa, you know, Bipa down in Brazil. Like, we have these Lightning startups all over the world that all of a sudden, so there's big surge of usage because people really got, oh, I can do this for remittances. It's like sending a text message instead of going to stand in a kiosk for Western Union. People really got it. But then, as the year progressed and as this kind of growth wave started to not really subside, but as it started to peak, we kept hearing from all of these emerging markets developers and Lightning entrepreneurs, like, okay, I've acquired all the Bitcoiners. Like, I've got them. They're using my app. This is great. The next tier of user, the next group that I'm going after to try and onboard onto my business, like, they want the dollar. They love the experience of Lightning. They love the global reach. They love the instant settlement. They love the low fees for a variety of reasons. Bitcoin is just, as an asset, is just a bridge too far for them. And what they really want is the dollar. And so that kind of just a bunch of timing happened to line up there with the tech being ready, with the team being ready, with hearing all of this kind of user and customer demand. We were like, okay, well, we got to build a protocol to support that. And so that is the ultimate goal. And today we don't have tethered assets integrated with Lightning yet, but we expect that is priority number one. And we expect to have that soon.
So once that combines, or basically that rolls out, that you can then leverage Lightning for the settlement of these assets, I think you get into a really interesting scenario where Peter McCormick was down, I think it was in Argentina, and he was trying to get dollar stable coins. And the conversation started off with, hey, do you want me to do this over Ethereum? And the guy laughed at him and says, no, that's like $5 just to conduct that transaction. We use Tron, which is $1, and for the transaction settlement. So on this, what would be the transaction settlement for a dollar? Would it be like what it is for Bitcoin, which is like a Satoshi or two to conduct that fee, basically the fee for the settlement once you guys roll that out?
Yeah, I mean, the really cool thing about the Lightning Network, I think the coolest thing about the Lightning Network actually is that because of the integrity of the market mechanics that surround the fee setting, the permissionless ability to open channels and add liquidity and, you know, undercut people whose rates are publicly advertised to route payments, there is constant downward pressure on fees in the network. Right. We see this. You can, and again, this is a fun thing to watch if you're a Lightning Network nerd like myself, but you can watch kind of the games that routing nodes play where, like, so let's say you wanted to receive to your specific node and you have five channels, five entities who are providing liquidity to you, right? All of their fees to route that final hop to you are publicly gossiped, right? They're public information. So if you watch, you can see people kind of play games and undercut each other. Right. And make sure that if one entity all of a sudden raises their fees out of equilibrium, guess what? They're just not going to route any payments. The network integrity is such that payments will go to the lowest fee route and make sure that there is that downward market pressure. So, you know, I can't give a specific number because it depends on where in the network you're sending to, but I can tell you that it's very rare to see total payment costs in double digit bips of the amount being sent. So, you know, for retail size payments, you know, anything under $1,000 or $100 or something like that, I mean, you're looking at a minuscule payment, right? And especially if you're sending something like $5, right? I mean, think about 10 bips of that. You know, that's you know, sub-cent almost. It is sub-cent. And so that's kind of what we're looking at and what we're expecting. It depends on the amount. But the fact that there is downward market pressure and, you know, Ethereum, you're competing with large DeFi for transactions for block space. I don't really know exactly how fees on Tron work, but I think it's just kind of up to Justin Sun to set whatever he wants, right?
I think that's accurate.
Yeah. And so there is not this free market of liquidity provisioning that keeps fees low. So I think over time, other platforms will not be able to compete. I think just the economics of the Lightning Network will win out to where the cheapest, the lowest cost and fastest way to transfer stablecoins will be on Lightning.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's sponsors.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Our friends at Corient provide wealth management services centered around you. Corient's goal is to exceed your expectations and simplify your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. They're one of the largest integrated fee-only U.S. registered investment advisors, and Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. They have extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. The teams at Corient put the collective power of their expertise into building you the custom wealth, investment, and family office solutions that can help you reach your holistic financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, speak with an advisor today at Corient.com. That's spelled Corient.com. That's Corient.com. When Rainn Wilson had a great idea, he turned to AT&T Business. They assured him no matter how out there his idea may be, they had his back. So he came up with this, a talking pillow designed to put you to sleep, backed by a reliable network and the only network with built-in security controls. And thus, Sleep with Rainn was a hit. Take your business to the next level at business.att.com. That's business.att.com.
All right, back to the show.
As a person that's open channels with other nodes, and you got large channels, you got small channels, you can zap sats through a node to somebody else. I'm curious about the fungibility of these sats and how the data of these assets are somehow incorporated into these channels.
Yeah, this is a really cool part of the protocol, I think, actually. It's pretty beautiful because in the initial stage, and this is more of just a kind of quirk of the protocol, initially, when we roll out Tapered Asset Channels, they will be private only. So you won't announce to the world, my channel exists, right? So that means you won't be able to actually route through Tapered Asset Channels. Instead, they will only be the initial hop, so the sending channel, and or the final hop, the receiving channel, will be the stablecoin liquidity. In between will be the existing Bitcoin in the network. So you will have, the first hop node will effectively be, if you're making a US dollar to then route through Bitcoin to then US dollar payment, the initial node will be effectively receiving dollars and paying out Bitcoin. And the way that they're doing that is using the existing hash time lock contract HTLC construction that all Lightning Network payments leverage. So you're doing a usual HTLC, that initial hop, is receiving dollars, paying out Bitcoin. Bitcoin routes through the network. Everybody gets paid in Satoshis along the way. And then that final hop receives Bitcoin and pays out US dollars, right? So it is a atomic payment where people on either ends are negotiating rates. They are doing the swap, an FX swap effectively. And the actual transaction in the middle, the routing nodes in the core of the network don't even need to upgrade. They just know that they're routing Bitcoin payments. They may not even know that it's a Tapered Asset payment at all. But at the edges, they may not know that they're using Bitcoin, right? They're just using dollars.
Is this only available to people that are running the LND implementation on their node, or could this be any Lightning?
The goal, the reason why this is an open protocol, this is an open spec. We did a lot of work actually in making sure that anybody can write their own implementation in Rust, in C, or whatever language would be best for their implementation. We want this to be for everybody. Now, we are only building the implementation that works with LND. But it is an open source protocol, and we fully expect as it gains popularity that we will see additional implementations that work for the other implementations.
Got it.
Because it's like, this is not a Lightning Labs thing, right? This is a Bitcoin thing. This is for everybody because we think this is really good for the network, for both networks, both for Bitcoin and for Lightning.
Let's say that you guys finalize this coordination over Lightning and you roll out the next update for a person running a node. For all these channels that I already have open with other nodes, is this something that I'm going to have to toggle to enable, or is it just ready to go? Do I have to update my node with the new LND software? Walk us through like what that's like from the perspective of the node operator that is not technically dialed into everything that's taking place here.
We are going to endeavor to make this as easy as possible. And, not just us, but you know, if you're running on Umbral or Start9, or you have a Voltage node, or kind of any one of the distributors that make it easy to run a node, a lot of them actually, with this next software update, you'll be able to access the Taproot Assets daemon like out of the box, right? So that's our bundle of tools that we call LitD. So LitD version 0.12 has LND. It also has TapD, and then it has our liquidity management tools, Loop and Pool, and then also has a couple other things. So we have this one nice bundle that a lot of the, again, Umbral, Start9, Voltage, BTC Pay Server, a lot of the like node in a box type operations provide that, use that bundle instead of just pure LND. So you'll be able to update, you won't have to do anything, and all of a sudden you'll have these new APIs to let you mint, send, and receive assets. Now, in order to then open an actual channel with Taproot Assets with stablecoins in it, you would need to either acquire the stablecoins yourself first, just like how you have to acquire Bitcoin first and then open a channel with that Bitcoin in order to use it, or you would have to get somebody who has the Taproot asset in question to open a new channel to you, right? So it's not like you can necessarily update existing channels that you have to all of a sudden also have Taproot assets in them. It would have to be a new channel, but that's just...
How about if I wasn't really even wanting the stablecoin, but I wanted to enable the routing through my node?
Great question. So that, very importantly, you don't have to do a thing, right? You just have to keep running. You don't have to ever touch Taproot assets if you don't want to, right? All you know, like I said previously, is that your volume has increased because people are sending or routing more Bitcoin around it. So this is why, you know, in the blog post, and we've been like working on kind of the framing of this, we're talking about how enabling this Taproot assets, these new stable coins at the edges of the network, and keeping the Bitcoin core, Bitcoin only, that really turns Bitcoin into like a global routing currency, right? It's where we're literally, for these FX transactions, people going from, you know, you could go dollars to yen or euro to GPB if you wanted to. Bitcoin is the other side of all of those trades, which I think is really, really important. And like it's a little bit of a different frame on making Bitcoin a medium of exchange than what people think, right? It's not necessarily medium of exchange in terms of using Bitcoin to buy coffee. It's no, you are exchanging currency to currency, and the medium through which that exchange happens is Bitcoin and the Lightning Network, right? You are physically routing dollars through Satoshis, through Bitcoin, and those node operators in the core, to your point, don't have to have any idea that they're routing a Taproot assets payment, right? To them, they're just doing their normal job of forwarding Bitcoin around. And you are actually using Bitcoin as like a medium, like in the traditional sense, like air or water or something, to route value. And we think that's like really, really important in terms of realizing the internet of value, where, you know, the internet, what that means is it's a network of networks. It's a way to connect a bunch of disparate networks. And we see Lightning similarly, you know, evolving into something that is a payment network of networks, where it is connecting, you know, a bunch of these other existing payment networks, existing fintech operations, you know, sovereign users, et cetera. But it is Bitcoin at the core, just like how at the core of the internet, it's just TCP over IP.
In preparation for this discussion, Ryan was kind enough to send me a couple articles that really kind of did an incredible job kind of walking a person through the technology and just some of the more interesting points about this. And one of the things that I really, really found a lot of value in, there's a person that the website is called coinshares.com. We're going to have a link to this particular article. It's very in-depth. We're going to have a link to this in the show notes, but about halfway down through the article, there's this figure 11, and it says the evolution of Tether transfers on crypto platforms. And what it does is it shows the percentage of Tether, and it's like what it's been minted on, which protocols it's been minted on. And it shows how as Ethereum came online, how it took away from this Bitcoin USDT use. And then as Tron came on, how it took all of the basically the dollar stable coins away from Ethereum. And because we're talking about the fee incentive, it's the incentive of not having to pay a lot to transact. And when I'm looking at what you're describing,
it's also just to be quick, a quick interjection. It's also the speed of settlement, right? That's a very, very important aspect, right? Bitcoin block times are 10 minutes. I forget the exact number for Ethereum block
times. It's like 2 minutes.
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah, right. Who knows what it is now? It's much faster. And then, you know, Tron is down the order of like, you know, 5 or 6 seconds. So yeah. Speed of settlement and low fees, that's what people want.
Yes. Okay. So when we think about that and we think about what you just described with this now taking place over Lightning, which is less than 5 seconds, it's immediate practically.
Milliseconds.
Mm-hmm. And the fee is so small that you don't even think there's a fee. I'm looking at the incentive of people continuing to use the Tron network, which by the way, like back to your comment, I don't know if people are intimately familiar with Tron, probably not if they're listening to this show, but your comment about Justin Sun basically being able to determine what the fee is. Because it's a very centralized protocol, like all the others. And why we continue to talk about Bitcoin is because it's actually decentralized. I don't know. I would like to think that a lot of this is going to come to this protocol because of those two key characteristics and incentives, which is basically no fees and immediate settlement. What am I missing? Yeah.
Prior to this year, I would have said that the thing that you're missing is that maybe Lightning isn't integrated all the places where the users already are. But this year we got Binance, we got Coinbase coming soon. Like all the places that the users are where they're sending USDT over Tron, they now have Lightning too.
Yeah.
And you know, the people who were using cryptocurrencies for like the utility of it, I guess even the people using it for the speculative value, but you know, the people who are using it as a tool, they're very smart and they're very pragmatic and they're very capable of figuring out how do I get the best deal and how do I use this new technology most efficiently. And I think that now that we have Lightning distributed in all the places and connected in all the places where these users are, I think it's just a matter of time. It's just a matter of getting the assets issued. And it's a matter of people realizing and spreading through word of mouth, like, oh man, like you're still paying a dollar per transaction on Tron. Like I'm only paying 5 cents on Lightning. You're missing out, man. You're on the old tech. I'm on the new stuff. Because I think you're right. It's purely just the incentives are better. The platform is better. And I think also another thing that that is underappreciated is Bitcoin infrastructure, Bitcoin software. And I'm absolutely talking about Lightning Labs' software, but not just specifically Lightning Labs' software. Bitcoin software is just, it's such a level above the rest of the industry in terms of security, in terms of integrity, in terms of how battle tested it is, also in terms of just how much attention is paid to developer friendliness generally. We hear from entrepreneurs all over the world all the time who are Bitcoiners, Bitcoin operating Bitcoin companies, but have had to support Tether on these other platforms because it's just, you know, there's user demand for it. And they're just continually just like, please, please let me spin down my various crypto nodes. Please let me just run Bitcoin infrastructure because I trust this stuff. I know how this stuff works. This isn't going to, you know, screw up my business or screw me over, but I got to have the stable coins, right? So I think there will also be a push from companies who are saying, oh, please use the stable coins over on this platform, on this network, instead of these others, because these ones give us tons of problems.
And by the way, if you're paying 5 cents on the network, at least today, like you probably overpaid on the fee by like 100x of what it actually costs, just to kind of give people an idea of like how small, like we're talking like 5 sats, which, I mean, you're talking tenths of pennies with the routing fees today.
It's not fair. It's not a fair comparison.
No, it's
we are definitely 10x better.
Yeah. Yeah. If not more. Okay, I think there's this stigmatism inside of the Bitcoin space for good reason that anything that is tokenized other than Bitcoin is just looked at as a scam or a fraud. And I think that if I was going to quantify why, it's just because when we look at anything beyond stablecoin dollars or stable euros, like it's just been a total rug pull. NFTs, all of it, right? So I think for a lot of people in the Bitcoin community, they would see the announcement and they're just saying, oh boy, now we're going to get rug pulled here. And then because of the scar tissue that so many people have with everything that's happened in this space, or in particularly the last cycle, they just want to shoot everything that's not Bitcoin.
I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. So what are some of your comments for that person as they're hearing us have this conversation? What would you say to them?
Yeah. I mean, I think I would say by no means do you have to use these assets, right? This is all purely opt-in. Bitcoin remains the only trustless asset. It remains the most secure, the most decentralized, obviously the most supply capped. It's the only one that you can 100% verify your ownership of yourself. This is by no means a substitute for Bitcoin. And we have taken great pains in our communication and in the design of the protocol to make sure that these assets only augment Bitcoin's existing capabilities, right? We took great pains to make sure that, you know, the way to transact on the Lightning Network is actually routing through the existing Bitcoin liquidity, right? I think that's really important to note that these are applications, these channels will plug in at the edges of the network and serve to, like, you know, the image that I have in my head of this is if you have, like, you know, this spider web network of channels, right? All of a sudden you start pumping in, you know, additional energy, additional juice at the edge, and you just kind of see this spider web, like, you know, start vibrating and flexing and getting bigger and bigger and bigger, like something from a, you know, horror movie or something like that. I don't know if people follow me with that, but it's really clear in my head. I'll do some, you know, Midjourney or ChatGPT image generation to try and get, you know, get it out there. But this should only be something that exists to augment the existing Lightning Network, to augment the, you know, node operators who just want to earn more Bitcoin by routing these payments without having to upgrade. And I think also we've taken great pains in communicating that, you know, with these assets, you are trusting the issuer, right? You are trusting explicitly the issuer. This is not a trustless protocol. The routing and using HTLCs and using the same contracts that Lightning Network uses, that is trustless. That still uses, you know, the same cryptography as Bitcoin payments. But if you're using a US dollar tapered asset, you know, you are trusting the issuer. And so for people who don't want to make those trust assumptions, then you don't have to use it. What we have seen on the counter, and I think this is, you know, important, is Bitcoin Twitter is very loud, but is not necessarily representative of all Bitcoin users. There's $120 billion of stablecoins issued out there. There are, I think the chart has been going around, and we had this in the blog post, stablecoin issuers own more US treasuries than the country of Germany, right? Than the country of South Korea. These are geopolitically and globally relevant on a scale that, you know, this is not just your little NFT pump and dump. Stablecoin, there is real, persistent, actual demand for these assets. And I think when we think about, you know, the ultimate goal of the Lightning Network, what we're shooting for is we're shooting to disrupt all of the analog payment networks, right? All of the payment networks that were set up and constructed before the internet. And this is, you know, SWIFT facilitates $150 trillion of transactions a year. Visa and MasterCard, all the payment networks combined, you know, facilitate $40 trillion of transactions in a year, right? Mobile money networks, which are all walled gardens, that's another, you know, $1.5 trillion per year. One thing that all of those networks have in common is that they support many currencies and not just Bitcoin. One thing that the Lightning Network does not have yet, but will have soon, is support for many currencies, right? And so I think when we think about, you know, making the Lightning Network feature complete and at feature parity as a system with these analog systems we're looking to disrupt, one of the most glaring missing things is support for, you know, primarily the dollar, right? With SWIFT, 46% of SWIFT transactions are the dollar, 23 is the euro, and then it's like, you know, EUR, JPY, RMB downstream of that. Right. So I think it's just one of those things where when we look forwards, what do the next, again, like just like we've heard from these Lightning entrepreneurs, what does the next tier of user want? How do we keep growing this network? How do we get it to the point where it reaches its destiny of disrupting all this legacy infrastructure? Like, we need stablecoins. This is kind of the next thing to add to it. And I think, you know, again, like I just want to underscore this. When I think about the Lightning Network from an infrastructure perspective, like I think about it in the same breath as, you know, electrical power grids, as oil pipelines, right? As fiber networks. This is mission critical infrastructure, or it will be mission critical infrastructure, right? For the world. This is not just for, although the micropayment use case is fantastic, this is not just for like tipping your friends and stuff like that. This is for global commerce. And, you know, those numbers that I threw out earlier, right? You know, in the hundreds and tens of trillions of dollars a year, that's big boy stuff. And that's where we're headed.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's sponsors.
Hey guys, do you ever wonder how investors like Peter Thiel have Roth IRAs worth billions? Many do more than just save a portion of their income, invest it in the stock market, and cross their fingers and hope it grows enough to retire on. The secret is they use something called a self-directed IRA, which has all the tax advantages we love, but with a twist. Instead of being stuck with stocks, bonds, and cookie-cutter options, a self-directed IRA with New Direction Trust Company allows you to invest your retirement savings in what you know and what you're passionate about. From real estate to startups to gold and silver, there are nearly unlimited investment options. You could even finance and set the terms of a loan. You name it, NDTCO will help you fund it. We're not saying you'll be the next Peter Thiel, but we're not saying that either. Because his secrets are now your secrets. Check out New Direction Trust Company and self-directed IRAs today at ndtco.com and unlock the potential of your retirement savings. That's ndtco.com. Kyle, you're connected with a ton of different investors and portfolio managers, and you're just really in the know on a lot of these things. How do you keep up with all the day-to-day headlines for your portfolio companies?
Yeah, so I used to have a ton of issues with this, and that was until I started using Yahoo Finance.
Really? What's so great about it?
So Yahoo Finance is awesome. I have my whole portfolio entered, and I can easily see all the top headlines to keep up with the recent news. And each day you get an overview of the major global events that might be moving the market. So I'm ready to easily pounce on any opportunities that come my way.
What else can you do on Yahoo Finance's platform?
They also have a number of cool features, including a tool that lets you link all of your investment accounts, analyst ratings, and independent research, as well as the ability to create customized charts.
Well, now I know that the audience is really going to love this one. And actually see they have 90 million monthly active users.
For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com.
The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
All right, back to the show.
When we look at this past cycle, I just can't even imagine the amount of monetary energy that was directed towards all these other science experiments happening on all these other quote unquote blockchains. And I say that because they're not actually decentralized. And it almost seems like a lot of that on this next cycle is going to be pointed directly at Bitcoin for innovations like the one that we're talking about right now.
100%.
Yeah. And I think that's really important.
It's super important. And I think that's, I mean, like for the folks that don't know my history, you know, I started my career in crypto. I was a lead analyst at a crypto hedge fund, right? I cut my teeth in the industry reading white papers about ICOs and stuff like that. And the whole 2 years, the longer I read these white papers, the more I talked to these founders, and the more I educated myself about first Bitcoin and then second about Lightning, the more mad I got that, like, why aren't these people building this stuff on Bitcoin? Like, none of this is going to matter. All of this is misdirected energy that's just, you know, going into some black hole that's going to, you know, pump these tokens briefly and then send them down to zero. Like, none of this stuff is going to matter if it's not anchored to the most secure blockchain, which is Bitcoin, right? If it's not taking advantage and leveraging the network effects of the 21 million cap, right? So this is like kind of personal for me in a way. With when I got to Lightning Labs, you know, a big, big priority of mine was, how do we get some of this capital from the, you know, crypto VC industry and just all of the capital that's flooding into these crypto projects, how do we redirect that to Bitcoin? How do we get the energy and the attention back where it matters, where it should be, which is, you know, contributing to Bitcoin's network effects, contributing to Bitcoin's destiny as a global reserve currency, right? How do we get that back? And we've made amazing strides in that direction over the last 4 years, you know, and that's collectively as a community, you know, not taking any credit for that. We've made amazing strides in the right direction. And I think you're exactly right. You know, there's never been a better time to build on Bitcoin. There's never been a better opportunity set for building on Bitcoin. Right. There's never been more stuff to do. The tooling has never been better for developers. You know, not only are we talking about just Bitcoin or Lightning or tapered assets, we're talking about Nostr, right? We're talking about, you know, Lightning in the AI industry, you know, micropayments there. We're talking about there's just a host of new protocols and new opportunities. And, you know, one of my favorite startups in the tapered asset space already is combining the two interesting areas of Nostr and tapered assets, mm-hmm. right? And trying to kind of make something that's greater, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, right? Which I think is really cool. So I think there's tons and tons of space to experiment. And then yes, our greatest hope is that in this next bull market, we won't lose so many people to the black hole of, you know, shitcoins and all the associated nonsense.
One of the things that I think is going to be important for the success of this is just on the wallet side. So when mm-hmm. we look at a lot of Bitcoin wallets, they, in a lot of their branding, it's that we don't do anything other than Bitcoin for our wallet. What are they going to have to do in order to enable this so that if I want to receive a dollar, a stablecoin dollar onto my wallet, is it a heavy lift for them to enable a lot of this, the timeline for their ability to implement something mm-hmm. like that? What does that look like?
Yeah, so we have, it's never going to be, I mean, we've made it about as easy, I think, as we can. If you're already leveraging our existing, again, that Litd bundle, and you're running either a mobile wallet or, you know, a custodial wallet or something like that, all you'll have to do is just upgrade to the latest version of the software. And you will at least have on-chain support for these tapered assets. And, you know, that I think is going to be really important and really big to your point about wallet support, because, you know, users aren't going to be touching the protocol directly. They're going to need some interface in between them and the protocol to make it easy. On the timing front, like I said, like there is a very clear light at the end of the tunnel now. Predicting dates for software is something that now I've been doing this for long enough, I know, to avoid that trap. You know, it'll get done when it gets done, but it is like absolutely our top priority. And, you know, we've gotten a pretty good track record of shipping code on time. And so I think that'll be something that happens sooner rather than later. And what you'll need to do as wallet developers, basically, you'll just all of a sudden inherit a bunch of new APIs that allows you to say, I would like to open a channel, but not just the Bitcoin channel. I would like to open a channel that has, you know, some Bitcoin and also some tapered asset USD, right? Oh, I'm going to generate an invoice, but when I receive this payment, I don't just want to receive it in Bitcoin. I actually want to receive it in this other currency. Like, oh, I'm going to go send a payment. And when I send it, I don't want to spend any of my Bitcoin. I want to spend my tapered asset USD, right? So there's going to be, you know, of course, a little bit of, there's an opportunity here, frankly, for the wallet who runs the best, who abstracts it the best for the users. And I think, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see, but we have made it as easy as possible in our minds. And now that we're ready for mainnet, like it's time to start getting feedback from the developer community and hearing, you know, what we did wrong and what we can improve. So, you know, if folks are listening and interested in doing that, like the big ask here is run the software. Let us know. Is it as easy as we think it is? Because that's just, you know, a classic thing with software engineering is you build according to what you think works. And then you go and toss things over to the users and they say, oh, this doesn't make any sense. That doesn't make any sense. You know, you messed this up, et cetera, et cetera. And so we've done a really good job of engaging with the developer community building up to this point, but, you know, always welcome more feedback.
One of the things that has been frustrating. So, you know, I came out of traditional finance, looking at stocks and equity and all this, right, as being the main thing that I would study and try to value and own. When I look at all the crypto tokens and things that have happened in this space over the last, call it 4 to 5 years, the reason I was always just so disgusted by it all is because I would always say, so like what equity or what is this token like actually representing other than just marketing, really? I mean, it's just like buy this.
But like, what if you could own a share of TCPIP?
Yeah, that was the narrative, right? That was the narrative. And
so bad.
And it got to the point where a lot of the tokens weren't even trying to convince people of a story of technology that was over, you know, 99% of people's heads. They weren't even trying to do that anymore. It was just buy this picture of this monkey that has 20 different types of sunglasses on that I used AI to enhance. And there's literally no value or no equity behind any of this digital vaporware, right?
Yep.
Now, just in July 15th, JP Morgan comes out and they are marketing this, the launch of the tokenized collateral network, the TCN is what they're calling it. And they're saying blockchain brings collateral mobility to traditional assets. They're going to tokenize equity. When I look at this, what they're effectively doing is they're making stock certificates immediately settling. And they already have the capacity to do this with the ledgers, their centralized ledgers that they already have. There's nothing new other than them basically using blockchain as a marketing scheme to do what they've already done. When I look at what you guys are doing with the Taproot Asset Protocol, you can't get around the SEC and every one of these developed nation states that are working with these banks that handle these equities that actually have things behind them because of KYC requirements. Like if I own a certificate of Apple stock and I want to send it to you, that certificate has to be KYC'd into your name. And so I see a major disconnect with anything that gets tokenized beyond currencies like the dollar, like what we've talked about, which I see as the primary use case for this is the tokenization of currency, right? But tokenizing equities, I think, is going to be a whole lot more difficult. But I say all that. In that, in this conversation, I came to the realization that because JP Morgan's running the server. Right. They're running this blockchain server. There's an expense to this that, I mean, it's not like you can go out and run this TCN node, right? Like people aren't going to go out there and run these nodes. It's completely centralized by JP Morgan. They have an incentive to leverage these rails because the cost to basically run the quote unquote server or the settlement is nothing. It's completely been diminished down to like tenths of a penny to settle these certificates as opposed to using their centralized network. I'm just, where do you, and a lot of this, I'm sorry, there's, I guess, a question in here. It's me trying to kind of wrap my head around.
I mean, a lot of this stuff, when I try and think about how things are going to play out in the future, although the analogy is never perfect, like, truly, I think you can look back at the lessons of the internet and how the internet spread. And I think you can learn a lot about how the internet money is going to grow. Right. And so I would say what JP Morgan is doing is they have built a corporate internet, right, of money. Right. And that's fine. Right. It may be good. There's some VP there that got a promotion because they're doing innovative things. Right. But what happened to all the intranets? All of them just got decimated because it was way, way more effective to leverage the network effects of the internet itself, right? All the open source software, being able to connect out to all of, you know, you get by connecting to the broader internet, you get the benefit of everybody else who's contributing to the internet, right? And I think that's the same thing with Bitcoin, with Lightning, with Taproot Assets. You know, another thing that I think in looking back at the internet, one more point before I move on to like specifically how would JP Morgan do this is like what the internet did more than anything else, like the trade of the 2000s was long Google, short print media. If you did that, you were ran out with a bandit, right? Because what it did was it was just more efficient to initially distribute, instead of taking analog writing and publishing it as in a digital format, it was much, much more efficient to take natively published, digitally published content and distribute that over the internet to everybody, right? That was just way better. And so sadly saw all of these local newspapers and, you know, all of these different print media companies just get decimated by the internet, right? I think we'll see the same thing with Lightning, where, you know, the trade of the 2020s is long Bitcoin, long Lightning, short analog payment networks. In the same way, because if you have physically analog issued currency and you're trying to move it, or other assets, like you mentioned, and you're trying to then move it over digital rails, that's just so much less efficient than natively digitally issued currency that is distributed over these digital rails, right? So I think the key here is that with currency, like what Tether and these other companies are doing is they have physical reserves, right? Or, you know, they're probably digital reserves, but off-chain analog reserves that they have been issued as these digital units. And they're just, people love them, right? Because everybody around the world wants dollars and they can't get enough of it. And there are structural physical impediments to them getting dollars outside of, you know, Bitcoin and Lightning soon, or Tron at the moment. And I think, although I'm not a lawyer, what I would say with, you know, these other assets is I could see a similar model taking place where maybe there is some initial kind of private walled garden, one might say like a custodial sidechain type thing that the issuer is running. And for whatever reason, they allow, you know, their holders to take ownership of these instruments, which then they can transact over, you know, the Internet of Money, the Lightning Network, frictionlessly, and, you know, with the great speed benefits of Lightning. And so I think, you know, ownership of this stuff is always really tricky. That's, the devil is in that details. The transaction of it, I think we have that solved. And I think like the gravity of the improved transaction experience, the lower fees, the instant settlement, the global reach, I think that will just continue to pull more and more assets into the digitally native world. To your point, like currencies are very straightforward. That makes perfect sense. I think equities, debt, et cetera, a little bit fuzzier for sure. But I think what we hope to do is to let it be known to smart people who see a better way of doing this, that we have a playground for you to come experiment, right? We have the tools. We may not have it all figured out yet, but we would love to support what you're looking to build and help you build it out, you know, on a foundation and on a platform that's going to last and that is going to scale.
It seems to me like if I had to guess how I see this kind of evolving is they're going to continue to come up with these TCN networks between JP Morgan and BlackRock and whatever. And then what's going to eventually, where I think the equity eventually gets tokenized, is they will use these rails, but they're going to use them for transactions between themselves, between BlackRock, JP Morgan, and anybody who's basically custodying equity on behalf of their KYC customers. They're going to use these types of rails, like this Taproot network asset protocol, because the cost for them to run it is nothing. It's literally nothing. But then they can immediately settle with each other on these certificates. Because one of the issues that I've had is like the business model is the rehypothecation of these dang certificates, these equity certificates. And as long as they have a stranglehold on that, because the SEC is always going to be behind their back, and the equity has physical property in the United States or Europe or whatever. And that's kind of the vulnerability of like why I think it's so hard to tokenize equity is because you have that physical contact point, right? But I think that these entities, call it JP Morgan or BlackRock, because they rehypothecate the stock certificates so that they can collect a yield on lending them out, I just don't see them with regulators giving up that stranglehold, but I think that they would potentially lever this network because it reduces their cost to clear with each other as their.
Well, so what I would, I don't disagree with any of that, but one kind of thing I would want to shift your perspective on a little bit is, you know, like one thing we talk a lot about with Lightning is like the US and Europe to a lesser extent is probably like the last place that Lightning payments are going to take off on like a daily basis, right? Because we have pretty good payments networks, right? Like they generally work. I mean, I think they generally work pretty well. There's not like a lot of pain that's forcing users to seek alternatives, right? We have seen great uptake of Lightning in emerging markets where they don't necessarily have good payments experience, where maybe they are predominantly cash only, or they can't, you know, really, they can't trust the banks, not because, you know, they may be underwater on their bond portfolios, but like because the banks like steal money from their accounts and stuff like that, or censor arbitrarily, right? So it's more like who has the pain point that is willing to take a risk on an early technology to build out first. And so one thing that I think would be really interesting is like, well, what if you look at places that don't have functioning securities markets?
Yeah.
Right. What if you look at places like Latin America generally, where there isn't, you don't have the same ability to, you don't have the same capital markets as the US, and maybe you have net new incumbents or net new capitalists who want to create those markets, right? If you're going to create a brand new capital market from scratch today, right, are you going to go and talk to the New York Stock Exchange and like ask for their software and like a license? Probably not. I think it would be a lot easier to get started in your basement, you know, building with tapered assets. And, you know, that's, again, not a lawyer, not a regulator. I know it's a lot more complicated than that, but I do think that that might be an area where we see a lot more early development. And as it gets proven out in kind of these more nascent markets, you know, and the technology advances, that's when we start seeing some of the bigger, you know, Western incumbents who they don't have a problem with capital markets are looking to solve, right? It works great for them. And I think, and the reason why I'm speaking confidently about this is exactly what we've seen with Lightning. This year, we got Binance and Coinbase. Last year, you know, we got, I forget exactly who, but like Cash App and, you know, a few others, right? Kraken was another big one we got last year, right? The year before that, we got Paxful and like, you know, big important institutions that joined, but they were of the smaller variety, right? The way that these protocols grow is, you know, start from the ragtag crazy people who believe, which is tapered assets today, and we love them, and we are similarly crazy and believe. And then you get like a little bit bigger. You get, you know, people who are willing to take not as much risk as the early people. They want to see the protocol mature a little bit, but they still want to be early, you know, the early adopters, from the innovators, early adopters. And then you get kind of your early majority who just want a thing that works, but they are willing to take a risk. And then you try and cross the chasm. And so I think with Lightning, like this year, I think we have definitely successfully crossed the chasm. I've been writing a bunch about it in our newsletter and like a bunch last year about, is this the tipping point? Have we crossed the chasm? Is it really working? Like, I think we definitely have. And we're like well into expanding beyond into the early majority and beyond. And with tapered assets, I think we'll follow the same pathway, right? We're like right now it's the crazies, but you know, who knows who will be the first person to figure out in their jurisdiction, like, oh man, like actually we can raise capital for this business. We can tokenize the equity on chain. And, you know, I can have a needs-based legal contract with my local government that says these are valid securities. And, you know, if you lose your private key, tough, your shares are gone or something like that, or they're burned from the supply, right? I think it's tough in the Western world and from a US perspective to, especially if you have a lot of knowledge about how the current system works, to think about how it could be disrupted, because you're like, well, all the avenues, the regulators are all captured or whatever. There are no avenues for disruption. They have all their bases covered. And I think that that's probably true, but there's a big wider world out there that may have problems they want to solve for themselves.
I love that point. And I think you're exactly right. And I think what I was describing was a very Western, US-centric mindset as I was looking at it. But I think as you look at, I mean, this is a massive opportunity for capital formation in areas that just haven't had the means to organize equity and build that investor base out because of all the infrastructure, the technology infrastructure that's required to do such a thing. And boy, this really offers a unique change to that. You mentioned, you
know, one thing that I would love to see, my favorite stories about like net new Bitcoin adoption are always about miners going out to, you know, rural areas and figuring out stranded energy sources, right? Like, I don't know if you saw this, I'm sure you did, but like the story of the guy who is running the national park in the Congo, I think it came out, it was like a year or so ago. I'll try and find it and send it to you to keep in the show notes to keep me honest. But there's this guy who, you know, runs this national park, I think in the Congo, and they have all of these rivers and all this hydropower, and they were like really struggling in COVID because nobody was coming to visit the park. And so he was like, you know what? Like, we can monetize this energy. We can make some money. We just need some Bitcoin miners. So he did the work and figured out how to get some Bitcoin miners. And they all of a sudden started mining in 2020 when Bitcoin was, you know, at 5 or 6K or something, and, you know, made enough money to keep the park open and keep the employees and blah, 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 all that sort of stuff. Right? Like, how cool would it be? Although that's an amazing story and great, and I hope people replicate it all around the world. How cool would it be if there was a mechanism where instead of him having to front all the capital himself, right, he could, in his jurisdiction, say, look, I'm going to create some stock certificates on the blockchain, on Tappert assets. I'm going to sell them to the folks who want to, you know, front the capital and down the road, take in earnings, take a cut of the earnings of the miners once they're live. And, you know, maybe even provide some shares to the local populace who is, you know, maintaining the mines or something like that. So he doesn't have to do it directly. And, you know, I don't know if there's legal restraints or anything around that that would make that difficult. But how cool would it be if you could get capital formation out there to like actually solve a real problem of, you know, helping monetize some of this energy and helping to build out, most importantly, helping to build out real energy infrastructure in places that need it. Right. I just think that would be awesome.
I love that. I love that. If you're listening to this and you're, you know, you could make something like that happen, boy, wouldn't that be awesome.
Wouldn't that be just cool, yeah. Right? I would just love to see that happen.
Yeah. You had mentioned real briefly, and I just want to highlight another source for people about Lightning kind of passing over its event horizon, if you will. River just recently published this incredible report that laid out in tons of detail why that might be the case. We'll also have that in the show notes for people to look at. It's an awesome report. Ryan, this has been a blast. I learned a ton. This is really exciting stuff that this is all happening on top of Bitcoin. No hard fork required for this to roll out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it really is just
beyond Taproot. I got to say, Taproot was required for this to occur. But yeah, just really exciting time. We'll have links in the show notes for a lot of these sources. Is there anything else you want to highlight or bring to the audience's attention?
One thing that, you know, it's a bummer to end on this, but maybe for the folks that are still listening, I think you'll get a little glimpse into something special, which is we really strongly believe, and I think the River Report highlights this really well, that Lightning as a network has a really natural flywheel effect, right? When I say flywheel effect, I mean like growth compounds into growth and compounds into growth and compounds into growth. And like, I think I don't want to get overconfident or cocky and say like, it's now self-sustaining and it's just going to keep growing till it's growing. But like the flywheel is starting to spin pretty fast. And when I say flywheel, what I mean is, you know, we start with developers. Developers come to this protocol. They build applications that abstract the details of the protocol for end users. Developers go and acquire users. Users transact on the network and create volume. Volume creates routing fees for node operators. When node operators start making money, that induces them to add more capital. Right, to allocate more capital to the network, which improves the capacity for everybody. It also induces new node operators to join the network and start competing in the marketplace. The more node operators that there are joining the network, the more developers there are tinkering with the software. And then the flywheel starts to spin. And those developers build new applications, right? Those new applications bring new users. Those new users create new volume. That new volume creates more fees. That fees creates more liquidity and more nodes. And then we get more developers and we get more users. And so I think if you think about it in that framework, and we've been seeing this really start to spin over the last couple of years. And like, you know, again, when Binance joined the network this year, they probably, if Binance has 120, 150 million monthly active users, something like that, that's probably more than every application on the Lightning Network prior to them joining combined, right? I mean, Cash App was definitely the biggest previously with like 60 million. Binance and Coinbase joining. Think about the energy that gives to this flywheel as it spins, right? If collectively we got another 200 million potential users, think about how much more volume that's going to create, how much more transaction fees that's going to earn for these node operators, how many more businesses are going to join. Think about the network effects that are growing here. And then think about, okay, now what happens when we add dollars into the mix? And it's not just Bitcoin. Think about how many more users that's going to bring, how much more volume that's going to bring. Like this flywheel that's spinning, I think is really, really important for business people, for investors, for founders, for developers to understand. Because, you know, if you had a chance to be early to the internet and start building an application and take advantage of just this massive exponential curve of growth that happened over the last 20 years, you would want to take advantage of it. And I think we have a second chance here. Right. I think we have the Internet of Money, you know, in our grasp. And I think the fundamentals are so strong and the ecosystem is so good. And there's just never been a better time to get building on this network that, like, if you're sitting on the sidelines and you're looking for something to do and you've been interested in crypto generally, like, I'm telling you, this is the opportunity. It's happening. It's growing. And we're about to really hit an inflection point where we start to grow. I mean, it's been growing fast so far. I think we're about to start growing at a crazy speed.
Especially with the macro backdrop.
I mean, it literally could not be more perfect, right? Just like across the board, the timing could not be better for building on Bitcoin right now.
Yeah.
It really is just, I think, a special time and a special period. And so I encourage people to get involved because there's always work to be done and there's, you know, always new opportunities to be seized.
I love it. What a pleasure. I learned a ton, and we'll have some of these articles in the show notes for people to pick through and really kind of dive into. So we'll have links to your Twitter as well and Lightning Labs. And if people want to read whatever, we'll have it there for them. So Ryan, thanks for making time and coming on the show today.
I'm blessed. Thanks for having me. This is great.
If you guys enjoyed this conversation, be sure to follow the show on whatever podcast application you use. Just search for We Study Billionaires. The Bitcoin-specific shows come out every Wednesday, and I'd love to have you as a regular listener. If you enjoyed the show or you learned something new or you found it valuable, if you can leave a review, we would really appreciate that. And it's something that helps others find the interview in the search algorithm. So anything you can do to help out with a review, we would just greatly appreciate. And with that, thanks for listening, and I'll catch you again next week.
Thank you for listening to TIP. To access our show notes, courses, or forums, go to theinvestorspodcast.com. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any decisions, consult a professional. This show is copyrighted by the Investors Podcast Network. Written permissions must be granted before syndication or rebroadcasting.